Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Like that song. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Suderstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I am here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for September 1st. It's Tuesday, 2015. Thank you for joining us this afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Oh, interesting day in the markets, and of course the stock market started with having the Rule 48 invoked, and for the New York Stock Exchange and the markets.
Which is what? What's Rule 48?
The Rule 48 is the plunge protection team, basically, in extreme high market volatility. What it does, it arranges. There's impact on the designated market movers to arrange for the fair and orderly open reopening following a market halt of trading at the exchange. So they close the they just let things filter through. They can invoke it in the beginning or at the closing of trading, and so if it looks like there's going to be extreme volatility, they invoke this Rule 48. If this market volatility condition is declared, what it is a qualified exchange.
It is legalized manipulation. That's
exactly. What they do is a qualified exchange officer is empowered to temporarily suspend at the open of trading or reopening of trading following a market-wide trading halt. And, you know, what's interesting, this all became, the rule was approved December 6, 2007. It has been used rarely since, but I believe this past month in August, it was invoked several times throughout the month. So you're right. It's a legal way to manipulate the market.
Yeah.
I mean, it's that simple.
Yep.
And that doesn't even go with all the other stops and everything else they have that they can use at their discretion throughout the day. And I think they use the market 48 every day on gold and silver. You know, the rule of 48, they must use it on gold and silver every day. But so we had a big down day in the market today. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. But first, let's get to the gold and silver prices. And we have gold off the high, but still up $6 today at $11.41, up $6.30. You have silver could maintain its lead today, down 3 pennies at 1470. Platinum was down 9 at 1003, along with palladium down 31 at 574. Palladium took a dive with all the auto manufacturing numbers that came out today, and with the discussion of China, that sort of tanked along with copper. And I got some of those numbers about the auto manufacturing. We can talk about that in a little bit. So big pressure on palladium. We have, okay, what's wrong with my computer? They don't like me talking about this stuff. The USDX today is down 0.55 at 95.41. Whoa, I didn't even see crude oil today. I knew it was down. Down 4.17 at 45.03. Huge. Oh, man, the market's going to be interesting tomorrow. And
like a 9% fall in a single day, maybe 9.5%. I don't know what that
is. Huge. And let's go ahead and see what the paper markets today. The Dow, 469 points. Still holding the 16,000 level at 16,058, down almost 3%. The NASDAQ is down 140, also almost 3%, 46.36. And the S&P followed along at 3%, down 58 at 19.13. The 10-year yield, you know, it's down from the, I think, the high yesterday of 2.22, down, let's see, we're looking at 2.17 for the 10-year yield. The euro, of course, gained strength, 0.79 at 1.13. And a nasty overnight sessions, trading sessions in the markets for the Asian markets. Hong Kong down 2.25%, Japan down almost 4%, London was down 3%, and Germany was down a little over 2.33%. So none of the world markets did very well overnight. And, you know, it's all pretty much based on China. They had a manufacturing index. This is the official index of Chinese manufacturing. It fell to a 3-year low last month, and another sign of slowing growth. The manufacturing index, which surveys purchasing managers, dropped to 49.7 in August from 50 in July. You didn't think that's really a huge drop, but it did go below 50, which indicates a contraction. But
see, the thing about it, to my mind, though, is this based on China or is it just blamed on China? People are saying China's having a contraction and therefore everything else is going to hell. I don't think that's what's going on. I think China's having a contraction because the global economy has contracted. I mean, China can't sell things if nobody's buying. We're not having – China's industries haven't shut down because they can't produce things. They're shut down because people aren't buying things. And to me, China is an effect, not a cause. Now, it's a domino situation where you knock one domino down, and that knocks China down, and then China knocks other things down. So it's hard to – you can't say that there's no causal, you know, mechanism that can be traced back to China exactly, but I see this as the global economy has been slowing down. It's been common knowledge for several years. You've watched the Baltic Dry Index and that sort of thing. We know that we're having a global recession, minimum, and probably a global depression. And so China's got nobody to sell to. And so China's folding up. And people are trying to blame China. Well, you know, China is just the first of a number of dominoes to fall. But I don't see that it's the cause of the dominoes falling.
No, it isn't. And I agree with you 100%. I mean, the world has been, it's been difficult around the world. I mean, we've been reporting on this how long? You know, the recession, this quote-unquote great recession, we never came out of it. And my question is, if China was getting all of its growth from the U.S. during the great boom leading up to the 2008, you would think that their stock markets at that point in time would have reached all-time highs. at that level. And then, you know, we came off the, you know, our peak and the rest of the world, Europe and everywhere else. I think a lot of the problem is, if we go a little bit deeper, yeah, I think China's getting blamed for it. But we know that a lot of money has gone into a lot of these emerging markets, and China is probably one of them. And when you see, you know, as soon as you, and which probably built it up to some degree, and that did help a lot of these smaller countries, the oil prices helped a lot of these emerging markets, and now all these little emerging markets, they're just getting hammered. I mean, they're having big difficulties, and it reflects in the purchases of items. And, you know, again, we see the reflection in copper and palladium and so forth, all your industrial metals. And so it's, you know, it's that little bit of a snowball. You know, I'm not quite sure what, you know, is the snow that fell that created, you know, the ability for the snow to make a big ball and to roll down the hill and become bigger and bigger. But, you know,
China is to some extent a bubble.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
All right. It's not just the question. We deal with China as if there's a great economic engine there and there's great fundamental
reality.
They
don't have anything.
And the truth is there's a certain – well, they have some things. There's no question there's
well,
some reality.
But
there's also the same irrational exuberance that Alan Greenspan complained about back in, what, 2005, 2006, somewhere in there, when he warned about it. And then a couple of years later, we had the onset of the Great Recession. There is an irrational exuberance, and people just, oh, I'm investing in China. China's the place to be. Oh, is it? Come on.
Well,
they, again, we've talked about this on the program where they have pollution that reaches, that is detectable all the way in California, across the Pacific Ocean. Right? They have rivers that look, that they are like, they're, some of them are red. Right? And not less just sediment. They are red as just rivers. I mean, there is a problem there. That place is, it's fragile. And everybody has been piling on for the last 10 years. Oh, China, China, China. The big engine, the big second biggest economy in the world, and the industrial engine that's pulling the world's economy. Oh, bunk.
No, look at the money that these huge hedge funds and all of this mass media to build China up, look at the billions and trillions of dollars that these corporations made. That's what it was all about. Look at these banks. And you're right. What does China have that, you know, it, but it was a play and everybody jumped on board. Yeah, you know, hey, China, put your money in China, or put your money here, and let's go into Brazil, and hey, we've got the BRICS nations. And all the whole time, China's sitting there laughing, building up their military, and that no one knows about. No one knows exactly what type of military China has, but I'll guarantee you, when it's released or it's found out, it will shock the world what they have built up. And, you know, China truly, you know, people truly underestimated China. And yes, I don't, I agree.
In some regards, they've underestimated, but in other regards, they've overestimated. And this thing has been hyped, and a lot of people have simply been foolish enough to buy the hype. China has been a fragile nation. They have so many problems, if only because of overpopulation. They got too many people. They don't know what to do with all these people. They don't know how to control all these people. I guarantee the people that are running the country are scared to death that it can burst, it can fall apart at any moment just from population pressures.
Well, I don't believe the Chinese government is concerned about their overpopulation. I think that's the least. I think that's the least. Not from a communist country. I don't think they really care about the population. They could care less.
Kill them all, but what are they going to do with them?
Really? Okay.
Well, no, I don't know what they're going to do, but I'm just saying this is not, they have problems that are so massive that they are not easily solved.
But you have to admit that China was built up, and they did provide a lot in the past couple of years. They did take a position from the United States as far as, you know, they are still, now they are in the number one market, but you see their sales are slowing. And what I thought was interesting, if I can find the note here, is their auto sales, when we hit a low, I mean, it was, you know, they did replace. I mean, the world doesn't move on automobiles, but again, it is a sign of how much money that was. There's a lot of money out there.
There's a lot of credit out there.
There's a lot of credit. You're absolutely
correct. All right, where is the money? you sell money.
Well, the bankers
the
get
banks
the money.
The banks and rest of it sell
multinational corporations get the money.
And there's a difference. China has been built up. China didn't just grow suddenly on its own, you know, on its own brilliance and industry. They didn't grow in the last 20 years to be something extraordinary. They have been aided and assisted by people pumping money into China, rather than other countries. And they've done that, and as a result, our economy has been diminished. China's has been expanded, but China is growing based on money that has been injected into there, not their own productivity. But I'm not saying there's no productivity there. That's not what I mean. But the primary source of their spectacular growth over the last 15, 20 years has been investment in China, foreign investment pouring into China. Now, we are at a point where people are beginning to say, oh, we don't have maybe enough foreign investment to keep this going. People in China are beginning to get worried and say, it's time to bail. The wealthy are allegedly trying to move $35 billion a month into foreign countries, including the United States, just to get out of China. I mean, it looks to me like China is sitting on the edge of a serious collapse. We talk about the United States and some people, oh, we're going to have a collapse. Well, maybe we are. But I guarantee you, whatever collapse we have here will be a picnic compared to a similar collapse in China. China has a collapse, and you're going to see probably millions of people die. Not just be inconvenienced and not have dinner tonight or something like that. I mean, dead bodies floating down the river. If they go down, they're going to go down. It's going to be a terrible situation. We go down, it's going to be a lot of trouble. But they crash, and it's going to be a catastrophe. So I don't know where it's all going, but the point on all of this is China is being blamed as if they're the response. I'm saying they are merely among the first of the dominoes to fall. And if you want to understand what's going on, in my opinion, you're going to look for deeper explanations than China's having a bad time. And for me, I'm going to be inclined to trace the explanation back to the fiat monetary system, the debt-based monetary system, the idea that we can teach, that we can take debt instruments and treat them as assets. Debt is not an asset. I know, you know, in the final analysis, it kind of looks like an asset. It can. But it still depends on somebody else's promise to pay. An asset is something you can hold in your hand. This is mine. I own it. Instruments don't fit that description.
I'm not sure China was the first domino. I think the U.S. was the first domino. I think the U.S. was the first domino, and then it just, you know, China just, there was a big gap. But, I mean, the South Korea came out today, and they revealed a 15% plunge in their August exports due to the weaker demand from China. So that's huge. I mean, that's huge. Yeah, it's South Korea, but it's still huge. And so it will be interesting to see how this pushes the trade agreement.
Which one?
Or does it disrupt
the Trans-Pacific?
Yeah, yes. Or does it disrupt it? Interesting how that folds out.
I think everything's getting so unstable, it's increasingly every man for himself. And I think they're trying to hold things together and establish, let's get an agreement going on here. We're all agree that we're going to do this, that, or the other in order to make this system hold together.
Well, that's been going on for 10 years, though.
Well, I get that, but I'm still saying I think maybe it's not just part of the motivation behind the agreement is to get people to try to hold the line. And I think the real forces of depression, a global slowdown, are going to drive people apart, and it becomes every man for himself. Let's take a break for some commercials. Melody and I will be back in a moment on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
If you have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Folks, I'm Alfred Adask here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
Gold and silver is only one of the few things that you can really, you know, depend on during these turbulent times. And I'm beginning to hear the clients that I talk to, I'm beginning to hear a little more fear coming into their voices, their concern. And what's sad is, you know, so many of their pensions, their retirements are tagged to 401ks. They don't have access to those funds. And folks, I'd be checking on what you have access to and how you can rearrange some of those funds and get yourself positioned if you're not already. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. We got some great prices on all our coins. We went over the comparisons yesterday on $20 gold pieces. They do continue to rise. We got some great specials on some of those coins. So make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. And make sure you sign up for our newsletter. You can listen to the radio programs. They are archived there on a weekly and daily basis. So if you missed one, you can certainly go back and listen for a very long time. If you don't have anything to do this weekend, well, you can listen to hours and hours of Alfred and myself. Wouldn't that be a joy, Al?
Yeah, I've been meaning to do that myself, Melody. But
really?
Yeah, maybe this weekend or maybe not. I don't know.
But so give us a call, folks, 800-375-4188. And if you hear anything unusual going out there in the gold and silver market, give us a call. We're always happy to, if it's a legitimate price, I'm always happy to match it or beat it if I can. And but you know, have to give us the opportunity in order to do that for you. I went back, Alan. Let me see if I can pull it up here quickly. My computer's running a little bit slow for some reason today. But the U.S. Mint for the month of August was a pretty good month for August. There was almost 5 million silver eagles sold. It was just shy. Let me bring that number up here. 4,935,000. 4,935,000. And so that was a pretty good number for August. And with gold eagles starting out a tad sluggish, I ended up with 101,000 ounces of gold sold. So a lot of folks are buying the 1/10 ounce. We matched, there was 13,000 one-tenth ounce sold in August. In July, there was 13,500. So a lot of folks are picking up the smaller fractional pieces. We've certainly been selling a lot of those. You can't beat the comparison with a gram or a bar. I mean, people recognize a coin. It's just more desirable and recognizable. So
I think grams are foolish.
Oh, that's a novelty.
Yeah, it's an interesting novelty, but again,
it's not going to do anything.
If the time ever comes where you have to produce, you have to trade a gram for some groceries, who's going to believe the little bit of metal, shiny metal? Who's going to sit there and take your word for it? No, this is really gold. It's a gram. This is really a gram of gold. Well, maybe it is, maybe it's not. But if you are able to produce, you know, a silver eagle, for example. All right, people look at that. All right, now we know what we're talking about. They will believe in a silver eagle. They're going to look at a gram of gold and say, I don't know. You know, it's for them, it's for the person who's going to ask to accept it, that's risky business. And it is certain if all you have is a little square gram of gold, it's certain that somebody's going to be counterfeiting these things. They're going to produce some sort of little metal. If anyone starts accepting grams of gold and payment for groceries, I guarantee you there are going to be people that are coming out with little grams of brass, shiny brass or something like that. And they're going to say, oh, yeah, this is gold. And how are you going to test that? You know, if assuming we ever got to a point where you could be buying groceries in the grocery store for either a silver eagle or a gram of gold. Today, if you walk in with a $100 bill, they're going to hold it up to the light, and they're going to rub that pen on it and the rest of it to see if that's a real $100 bill or it's counterfeit. How are you going to tell? How are you going to get clerks to accept little pieces of shiny metal? They're easily duplicated. I mean, it takes a certain amount of skill to make a counterfeit silver eagle. But how much skill does it take to make a counterfeit gram of gold? If you'd have to have scientific apparatus there where you can determine what is the actual volume of this little chunk of metal? What's the size? What's the volume? Now, what's the weight? Divide the gram by the volume and calculate whether or not the weight corresponds to a measure of gold, or is it something other than gold? I mean, the whole thing, it just grams stupid to my mind. They just don't make good sense.
Really?
On top of which...
You pay too much.
That's right. That's exactly right. You're probably, if you're buying these little grams of gold, you're probably paying about 50%, 40, 50% more than the gold is worth. It's a rational choice.
This morning I watched a video someone sent me about some guy, I don't remember his name, but he was out there with a camera and he had Hershey bars in one hand,
yep.
chocolate Hershey bars in one hand, and a 10-ounce silver bar in one hand. No one, well, we don't know because, you know, they edit those videos. He showed, you know, maybe 10 people taking the chocolate bar, but, you know, and maybe 20 people took the silver bar. But
no, I don't think so.
No, you don't know.
Ounces or 20 silver bars? I don't think so.
If he showed the people that took the silver bars, nobody would watch the video. But my point is the people that took the silver or took the chocolate candy bars, if he had a coin in his hand,
that would have been a different
point. I think it would have been, because I give that example all the time to my customers who ask me, well, which should I buy, bars or coins? Well, you put a bar in one hand and a coin in the other, and you present it to somebody, what do you think most of them would choose? 99% of the time, they're going to choose the coin.
Yep.
And he sort of proved it, because people didn't want the bar. Now, whether they didn't want the bar because, you know, hey, if somebody was offering me a silver bar on the street,
it's just stupid.
The
bar had to be worth $200 or more, and they took it. They would rather have a Hershey bar. The guy's standing on the street. He's got somebody with a camera. People are coming up. He says, this is your lucky day. And he says, you won. Your choice, you get your choice. You either get a brand new cold, a cold right out of the refrigerator Hershey bar, or you could have 1 ounce or 10 ounce silver ingot. What do you want? Silver bar. And the people, they look, and everyone he showed, he might add 8 or 10 people, every one of them where he did the test, they took the Hershey bar instead of a gold bar that, or excuse me, silver bar that had to be worth over $200. And they'd rather eat the Hershey bar. This is the kind of ignorance. I mean, this is not just, you know, the Jay Leno's all-star walking all-stars or whatever it was. I mean, this is an extraordinary example of how ignorant a significant percentage of the American people are about money. They don't even understand the difference between 10 ounces of silver and a Hershey bar. That is not a level of ignorance that's going to be easily overcome. How will politicians, when the time comes, explain to people, your little pieces of paper aren't worth anything? They're not even worth a Hershey bar anymore. And people say, what? I can't get a Hershey bar with a $10 bill? No. You're going to need some silver or some gold. And people are saying, what? Are you crazy? We're going to need silver or gold. I can't get Hershey bars without silver or gold. I mean, you see this, and it's one of those things like, my God, you feel like Dr. Doolittle. Trying to talk to these people is like trying to talk to, I don't know,
animals.
The push me, pull you or something like that. It is, good God. And it's a real tribute to American education. We have adults who would rather eat a Hershey bar, I'd rather have a Hershey bar than 10 ounces of silver.
I think the dumbest, and then we'll move in. I got some numbers here. The dumbest of the bunch was when he offered this woman, well, there's a pawn shop right there. Let's go in and see exactly what this is worth. And she still took the chocolate bar. She didn't even bother to go into the – at least I would have said, oh, well, if I didn't – well, okay, let's go see what it's worth. You know, maybe I can sell it and take the money instead. No, she just took the chocolate bar.
I mean, you could have pawned it for $100.
You could have pawned it for $50.
Yeah, $50. All right,
you know, whatever.
Bought yourself what? 25 Hershey bars or something. I don't know what.
And I don't mean to laugh. It's pathetic. It's sad, but it's like
it's just mind-boggling.
It really is.
All right. I mean, these people. Good God! How can you find people that are that ignorant and yet? The real point is, how can you find people that are sufficiently intelligent to pass that test?
Well, let me say this, too, because this is a big concern I get from many, many people that I talk to. They're concerned about, well, who's – and I hear it all the time. Well, so-and-so said nobody's going to want my gold and silver. And the question is, the people on the street that took the chocolate bar – instead of the, you won't be dealing with them. You're going to be dealing with business people. You're going to be dealing with the moms and pop shops who, if they don't change and understand the ways, they will be out of business. And mm-hmm. they have no way to pay their bills and for them to survive. Businesses, commerce locally will survive. Some will go out of business, but those that are smart and are able to understand what is going on, they will take your gold and your silver. So you just don't let people say, like the people who took the chocolate bar instead of the silver, oh, nobody's got, you're not going to be dealing with those people.
Well, they'll get educated quickly.
They'll get educated, and that's what
right.
it's... But
painfully, they will be educated painfully, but they will be educated quickly. And they'll begin to realize, you mean that a bar of silver I mean, this is like a Monty Python film. You can almost see these people standing there as the thought goes through their mind and they begin, you mean the 10 ounces of silver is worth more than a Hershey bar? I mean, it'll be an astonishing moment of enlightenment for some of these people, but regardless, they will catch on, and well, it won't be long.
No, I just wanted to talk.
Now, they will still say, well, if you offer them two Hershey bars instead of a silver bar, then they'll still take the Hershey bars, probably. But one Hershey bar, they'll wake up, and they'll be too smart to take that deal again.
I just want to talk a little bit about August and the markets. I talked about, August and September are truly the volatile months in the stock market historically. And we've seen the same thing we have as far as this August went. It has earned its place in the record books. This was the worst August in nearly two decades for the Dow Jones. The Dow posted about a 6.4% decline in August, and which marked the worst month in more than 5 years. Comparing the month with other Augusts, it is the worst August since 1998. Overall, it was the sixth worst monthly performance for the Dow, and the worst since May 2010, when the Dow dropped 7.9%. The S&P pretty much posted a 6.3% fall in August, its worst monthly tumble in more than 3 years. And if you stack up against other August returns, the S&P 500 marked its worst fall since 2001, when it tumbled 6.41%. And not to forget the NASDAQ, it was off 6.9% for the month. It was similarly steep. Try and say that two words together. With the, of course, the tech heavy, it was the worst performance on the month in 14 years, and it was the worst monthly return overall in 3 years. So volatility for August, and yet September historically is the worst month.
So here's the question.
Yes, sir.
We know that the markets are vulnerable. All right, we've seen evidence of that in the last week or 10 days. We're seeing evidence of it today, but we're going into the most volatile month for the markets. And typically, if I understand correctly, September is on average the worst month of the year for stock markets. All right? That's just an average over a period of years. They compare the month. And how does January compare to February to March and so on? And September is usually the worst month for the markets. Now, we're going to have what will probably be, statistically, we can expect a bad month for the markets in September. All right? But we can also anticipate that the markets, in theory, will start rising again later on. This is going to be their yearly low, probably. But will it be low enough to really catch the momentum that's already here? All right? Right now, we had a problem in August. Is September going to magnify that problem and give it a certain amount of momentum where it continues to fall, or come October, are we going to see something like a recovery just as a normal statistical event?
Well, I think it's the beginning. And what I don't see in the markets, I mean, sure, you look at all the volatility index and the fear indexes, and they all show, really bad numbers.
Yeah.
But yet there's no, you don't sense the sort of fear being coming through in the markets. It's kind of strange and bizarre, but yet you hear there's so much influence coming from mainstream media, and there's so much influence coming from financial planners. And people remember the last time the Dow went to 6,000, hey, it came back to 18. So there's nothing for me to worry about. I'm going to start looking for bargains. Kind of like in that phase where, on the dips, but there isn't anything there to buy. So I think if September continues the way August did, I think the fear will be created, and very quickly. And again, we have Labor Day. You have a lot of people out. You have a lot of people getting their kids ready for school. People are distracted at this point in time. And so you know, it's really hard to call, but I really don't sense any panic yet in the markets. We don't see it in the bonds. You know, the 10-year, yeah, you know, the 10-year yield dropped a little bit, but, you know, nothing, you know, drastically to say, oh, my gosh. And
we'll see.
Let's
talk about the oh, my gosh moment when we return. We'll take a couple of commercials. Take a couple of commercials, and Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival, and we will at least speculate on what might constitute the oh my gosh moment. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We are talking about what is it going to take to produce an oh my gosh moment in the stock markets, in the economy, where people all of a sudden say, wait a second, we got a big problem here. Because as Melody was pointing out, so far that doesn't appear to be part of the mindset of the American people. The market dropped. It was up pushing 18,000. Now it's down 16,000. We've had a serious drop. It's dropping again. Serious amount today. Over 400 points. Is this cause for alarm? And you would think it is on one level, but it doesn't appear to be. It's happening and people are looking. I said, so why do we... Why are people not concerned, Melody? Do you have any idea?
Why they're not concerned?
Yeah.
I think, number one, they don't have much choice. I mean, again, their money is all bound up in their 401ks, and I think there's still that confidence is still in place. You know, people still see the hustle and bustle of things being built, the home market, you know, everything is being distorted to various degrees, the auto market. Hey, if, you know, in one breath you hear everybody's, you know, buying automobiles, but yet if you look into the truth and you take out the spin, you realize, well, people are buying automobiles, but it's all by debt and it's by money they can't afford, and it's all subprime loans. So, yep. Again, what any of the growth that they're seeing is not coming from solid growth, just again manipulated growth. And I think people, that confidence has not it's still there, it hasn't disappeared. And you don't hear of any one big event. You know, it's like, oh, okay, this is a 10% correction, okay, so this is what they've been conditioned to believe over, you know, ever since the market started moving up, ever since they introduced, you know, all the quantitatives and the bonds were being bought that pushed the market higher. You know, all these multinet corporations manipulating all their stocks and manipulating all their dividends that they pay. You know, most of those dividends, they're paid by debt. They go out and borrow the money to pay the dividends because the money is so cheap for them. I mean, it's just mind-boggling. But the normal guy doesn't know this. The guy out there in the markets doesn't know this, doesn't understand this. And so he still has that little bit of confidence.
I've seen reports. I see two things that might explain this, at least partially. First is after the Great Recession started and the markets collapsed 2007 through 2009, it drove a lot of private investors out of the markets. I've heard reports that 80% of the stocks right now are traded just by government or government agencies and or institutions. They're dealing with pensions and so on. But the private investor is a minor part of the market right now, and therefore, there's not a lot of people who are directly involved in the market where they sit back, oh, my God, I'm
in. I don't think he was in 2007. I don't think he was in 2007 either. He came out after the dot-com bust. I mean, that's when all the private investors were in.
The point is, there aren't that many people who are directly in the market the way we used to think about it. And therefore, they're not directly concerned. Market goes up, what's that mean to me? I don't have any stock. Market goes down, what's that mean to me? I don't have any stock. It's not, so therefore I'm not going to panic about this situation. The other point is this. The market has been supported and sustained by quantitative easing and or the Federal Reserve for ever since the bottom in 2009. We've had a bull market in the equities markets that's gone on for 78 months now, and the average bull market is something like 50 months. And this one's 78 months. Why? Because it's been subsidized by the government. They're holding it up. Well, that gives people a certain amount of confidence who are looking at this investing and say, well, we can't lose. The government's not going to let the market really go down. We've got the plunge protection team. The government is manipulating the market so we're guaranteed to make money over time. We may have some corrections and some, but people have a level of confidence in the market that's based on government manipulation, Federal Reserve support. They're saying they won't let it, they won't let the market really collapse.
Confidence.
So the question is, as long as people have this confidence, at least in the back of their mind, how long can government continue to support the markets? Is there a limit on how much money can be pumped into the system under the guise of quantitative easing that directly or indirectly winds up supporting the markets? And if we reach that limit, is that when we see the oh my gosh moment? And people say, holy cow, this is a big problem. Do you have an opinion on that, Melody?
Well, no, I agree. I mean, you know, when you really do look at the participation rates, yes, but people are still in there with their plans, their retirements. I mean, there's a lot of money there.
Well, they don't understand that, though. A lot of them don't understand.
But it's all about the confidence.
I've got a retirement plan, 401k, and
they'll understand when they get their quarterly statement. But until then, you know, but you're right, it's the confidence. The government has been there. Wall Street's been there. Multinational corporations have been there. And but that panic will come.
I have a little article from Newsmax. Jim Rogers.
Yeah.
He's an international investor. He's you see him.
Yeah, partners, Soros,
that sort of thing. Yeah. Known, well respected. You know, I mean, nobody's perfect in the rest of it. But Jim Rogers and Newsmax. Here's the headline: Jim Rogers, Fed will save the market one last time. The Federal Reserve will probably save the market one more time by artificially printing money, but the next big rally will be the last before an economic day of reckoning arrives. This is according to Jim Rogers. The nation's central bank will buy more bonds. They'll do something, and then we'll have another big rally, but that's going to be the last rally. Maybe they can save the market one more time, but the world is starting to give up on all this artificial money printing, he said. All right? And all I'm saying, I just bring this up, is because here's Jim Rogers, and he's saying, look, they've just about shot their wad. They might be able to try one more episode of something like quantitative easing, where they can pump more money into the system and thereby save the markets. But he does say probably, and he says maybe. So there is doubt. Can the Federal Reserve save the markets one more time, or has the Federal Reserve already rung up so much debt that it can't go much deeper into debt? To make a few gestures, they can support the market. They can stop the market from falling more than 400 or 500 points on certain days. They can make it jump back 400 or 500 points by a certain amount of manipulation, maybe, maybe not, but they can perhaps sustain the illusion of normalcy a while longer. But can they generate another $80 billion a month for quantitative easing for? Can they sustain that over the course of another year? Most of $1 trillion? Do they have another trillion to throw into the markets? And if they don't, Rogers thinks they've got one more chance. They got enough resources. They have enough resources where they can save the markets one more time. Maybe. A lot of people are thinking, no, I don't think so. I don't think they can even save it one more time. Now, there's the question for us. Can they save the market one more time, Melody? Can they really save it? If we see something like 2007 through 2009 and the markets fall to 6,000, if we see it again, can they prevent it from falling even further, or goes into free fall and there's nothing to stop it? You know, they dragged it out over a couple of years. We went from the 2007-2009 to the bottom. We had about 18, 24 months there while the market was falling. But that was falling while they were trying to make an effort to stimulate the economy. They were trying to do, the feds were trying to inject money into the economy that wound up in the markets. How fast will it fall if the Fed can't make a significant effort at restricting that fall? Last time they slowed the fall. They prevented a collapse. They deserve credit for that. If we had a similar fall again, could they stop it? And if not, how far down is it going to go? You know, you talked yesterday about the idea there was people talked in the past about the Dow and the price of gold are going to cross somewhere around 3,000, meaning gold will go up to $3,000 an ounce and the Dow Jones will fall to 3,000 points on the, you know, the Dow Jones industrial average. Is that possible again? You're skeptical. I know you were skeptical yesterday.
No, I think gold will be higher and the Dow will, you know, if it matches, if it had that exact crossover. I mean, I am thinking you could see, you know, 8,000 gold, not 8,000 Dow, but, you know, it's, you know, to call tops and bottoms is, but, yeah, it's going to be definitely higher than 3,000. Can the Dow go there? I mean, it could do anything. I mean, I think September is going to be a rough month in November, because not only we have all these politicians, these Republican politicians out there running around, and if they have any, you know, September is going to be an interesting month because you have the You know, the CBO reported that, hey, the Treasury Department's going to be running out of money sometime between mid-November and early December. So if any of these politicians want to get in the news, they're going to start talking about this and start talking, and it's going to bring our debt problem maybe to the forefront.
And if they don't, Mr. Trump might.
Mr. Trump might, absolutely. So, you know, and I think this is the problem. You know, you can look at all these different scenarios and so forth, but our real problem is right here at home. We could talk about China and, you know, the dominoes. This is our problem. We have a debt problem.
Yeah, I know.
And it has to be addressed. Hey, we haven't created any debt for since, what, 8 months or whatever?
Allegedly on the national debt, because we've hit that debt limit and we haven't created it. It's just set there at $18 trillion and change, and it hasn't.
Just wait until these numbers get released.
Well, you know, there's another point about this. If we can go without creating any debt, that's what they're claiming. We haven't created any debt in 6 months or so. I don't know how long it's been. It's just set there right at the limit, or they're nearly at the limit. Right? How is it that we couldn't go without creating any debt for the next 6 months, and the next 6 months after that, and the next 6 months after that? Why do we have to continue to commit to create more debt? If we can go for 6 months without creating debt, why not go for a year? Why not go for 5 years? It's fraud. We can't do it. It can't be sustained. It's an illusion.
And I mean, they're not even counting the interest on the debt that we're – I mean, that would be added to the debt, but
– The whole thing is,
I mean, it's just
house of cards, house of smoke and mirrors and cards and one thing and another. And you look at it, and we've got half the world would rather have a Hershey bar than a 10-ounce bar of silver. And how are we going to prevent an economic collapse in a world where that sort of mindset is common? Anyone have an idea? I do not. And it's part and parcel of the reason you get a leaf in the breeze, you know, and the breeze keeps telling you, look, when this goes, this is going to be trouble. There are too many people who don't understand. How can we solve the problem if people can't even diagnose and understand the problem? They will eventually, but they won't initially. And in that initial ignorance, they're going to get hurt badly. We're out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening to Financial Survival. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. There never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.